Welcome to Beyond Standards, your source for authentic discussions about the world of teaching. Get ready to explore challenges, share inspiring stories, and discover strategies that will empower you to make a lasting impact on your students. Here are your hosts, who are trying to master the fine art of maintaining their sanity while managing a classroom, Joe Rohrhoff and Jeff Bologna.
What's up, fellow teachers? Welcome to the Beyond Standards podcast, where we cut through the BS and talk about the reality of what it's like to be a teacher. I'm your host, Joe, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and fellow middle school teacher, Jeff. Jeff, how are you this evening?
Good evening, Joe. I'm doing well. You know, you mentioned and you always say cut through the BS, and we're dealing with some BS right now. And as far as I'm concerned, standardized testing is the quintessential BS that we have to deal with in the spring right now. You know, our eighth graders just finished the PSAT. Tomorrow we're doing the M-STEP. Then our seventh graders are doing the M-STEP. And then they do the NWEA. Then my sixth grader. It's just ridiculous. The month of April and May, why are we doing all these? You know, and is it a true reflection, Joe, of what actually happens in the classroom?
And I think more importantly, is it a true reflection of like these kids as human beings? Does a score on a piece of paper, because our district puts so much stock in it, to where, and every district probably does this, but they send that email home that says, make sure your kid eats a good breakfast, make sure they get enough sleep the night before, and make sure they do all these things. And they put so much emphasis on the scores that come out of these tests, when I wish they would put that emphasis on just the overall well-being of the kids and making sure they're okay.
You know, and I had students in my room today, you know, the math portion, for example, was 35 minutes. And within 15 minutes, they're sitting there twiddling their thumbs. I'm like, awesome. Yeah, your numbers are really going to be through the roof today. Thank you for, you know, really taking this seriously. And it's just unbelievable. And then we have to turn around and do it all again tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm thankful that I teach a subject that usually doesn't get measured in these tests. Social studies usually doesn't pop up, but it does tomorrow. So we're taking the M-STEP social studies tomorrow. So hopefully the kids, you know, get a good night's rest and eat a good breakfast tomorrow, because I want their scores to be through the roof.
We got to get those social studies and science numbers way up. Let's go. Because we, you know, God knows
they've
ELA and math aren't important. It's social studies and science.
Bingo. That is exactly right. Thank you for finally recognizing that.
I see it.
All right. Ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's do this. These are like my favorite type of episodes to do.
All right. So today we are doing another teacher helpline episode, where we take some common scenarios that teachers face in their everyday lives. And I know every teacher that listens to this will identify with these situations. And I think we picked some tough ones today, because both you and our guest, who I'm going to introduce in a second, said, like, man, these are some like difficult problems. They're real problems, but they're difficult and they're tough to come up with a good solution to. So I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about these issues. But before we get into the first issue, I want to introduce our guest today. Our guest is Christy Maurer. Christy is one of our coworkers, a teacher. She's a math teacher at Meads Mill, and she has been teaching for 22, or this is her 22nd year, and those are all at the middle school level. So we've got a wealth of knowledge. I know Christy has dealt with a lot of these over the years, and we are fired up to have her on. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. We ready to jump into that first scenario?
Sure.
So, but before I share this, I got these from a Facebook group called Teacher Helpline, where teachers come and seek help. It's exactly that. Some come to vent a little bit, but some come to seek help, and they have some, you know, difficult situations. So we've got three or four situations that we're going to run through today. And here's number one. Any suggestions for a student who puts her head down every class period? She refuses to raise her head to work or listen, even when she's told to. She's not sleeping because she immediately bounces up when the bell rings. The student has a 504 for ADHD, ODD, and anxiety. Sending her to the office will only give her what she wants, getting her out of the classroom. Having a parent meeting has not worked. The mom blames the teachers for everything, and it's gotten to the point where the superintendent has to join us when we meet with her. We have a Google Doc that we put missing assignments on, and it's shared with her parents. She doesn't turn in any of the missing work. She says, we can fail her, I guess, but she'll still pass on to the next grade. And any suggestions, any ideas to help this teacher out dealing with this student? Jeff, have you ever had a student like this?
No, never. You know, Joe, you said how you got these from a Facebook page, and I'm sure Christy and myself were reading these before, and we're like, I'm pretty sure you got these from the halls of our school in the last 2 years. Don't give me this BS about a Facebook page. Yeah. Joe, how do you handle a student like this?
Oh, you're flipping it right back to me?
Yep, I'm throwing it right back at you.
All right. I'll take the first one. So the first thing I would tell this teacher, the first piece of advice, is that this teacher is doing a lot of the right things. I feel like this teacher is doing everything we would all do and doing more than some of us would do, you know, to reach out to the parents to do that. And at some point, as a teacher, I think you have to kind of let it go. And as sad as it sounds to say, oh, I'm just going to ignore this student, I'm just going to kind of let this one slip through the cracks, you also have to think about the other 29 students in your room. And if this one slips through the cracks, but that means that you can bust your butt and help 29 other people, then that might be what you have to do. And as sad as that sounds, that might be the reality of it.
I would agree. I mean, when I first heard this, obviously, the parents aren't going to be a support, so don't bother going down that path and wasting your time if they're not getting their child to do their homework or supporting the interaction between the student and the teacher. And I mean, for me, I honestly have been lucky in that I haven't had too many students be defiant and just refuse to do what I'm asking them to do. But like, if the teacher's tried to make a connection, tried to understand, even talk to the student about why, you know, their head's always down and it's just, they keep doing it, I don't know what else you can do other than trying to make that connection and kind of get to the root of the issue, other than just trying to be defiant.
Yeah. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
You know, Joe, when you started to go into that, on my notes right here, written right next to the side, it says, I hate to say it, but just kind of wipe your hands clean of this one. And it's exactly what you said, Joe. It's like, you don't want to ever say that or think about that, but you've done everything you possibly can. I mean, my only suggestion to this teacher is just make sure, and I'm going to say this multiple times on this episode, is make sure you document everything. You know, make sure you know, any emails that you have sent home, you keep track of. That Google Doc is a great way to track all the missing assignments. Make sure, you know, that grade book is staying up to date. You know, make sure any conversations with the parents at home on the phone or meetings, you have minutes from those meetings, things like that. Just document everything. But at some point, you just kind of have to throw your hands in the air and say, you know, I give up. I don't, you know, you're trying everything. I guess you hope that they will get the message when they don't graduate. And, you know, if they keep this attitude up and they go to the high school and they have to pass a class to take the next class. But I do understand, you know, they're going to get them passed through no matter what. I mean, we've seen it in our building.
Yeah. And this teacher has clearly exhausted their resources. You know, they don't mention anything about a counselor or psychologist, but if they're at the superintendent level, like, they've clearly exhausted all their resources that they have as a teacher. And at some point, these situations fall off the teacher's lap and they fall higher up. At what point are we going to hold this student to be accountable? At what point are we going to hold this mom to be accountable? Because if you were the teacher and if the kid had the consequence of, hey, he's going to be held back, that might be a motivational factor. But when you tell a kid before the start of eighth grade or whatever grade this student's in, if you tell this kid before that, hey, you're going to the high school next year, you're going on to ninth grade no matter what. And I know I brought this issue up with our assistant principal the other day. Like, have we ever had a student that was forced to repeat eighth grade because they didn't do anything, they didn't learn the material? And the answer to that question was no, we have not. We have never done it. And at some point, districts have to do that, because to put all of the burden on the teachers and to just say, oh, you need to, you know, foster a relationship with that student. Like, at some point, teachers are trying to do that. And if this student is doing that in all of his classes, then clearly that is not working. And having a parent that is, you know, siding with the kid and not holding the kid accountable puts a teacher in a tough spot, where a teacher sees that kid for 45 minutes a day and is expected to get him to do algebra or write an essay or whatever it might be. And they get no support. There is no accountability, no support from home. So again, if you pour all your energy and your focus into that one student, then you're leaving the other 29 behind, and that's not fair to them.
I agree. I know some of the most difficult students I've had to get through to and to motivate. It their issue is typically not a school issue. It's like an attitude and perspective issue, and it's something that they need beyond, I think, what we can offer in the classroom. We can present the curriculum, try to connect in all the ways we can, but their attitude about school, their decision whether or not to participate, that's like a bigger thing. I almost feel like some of them just need some sort of a counseling session to change their perspective on what school is supposed to be. And until they change their viewpoint, you know, we can only do so much.
Yep.
You know, and when you dig deeper into this story too, you know, you mentioned the part where it says, parent meetings don't work. The mom blames the teacher for everything. So the student is probably hearing that at home as well. So then that adds more to that ODD and that defiance anyways. You know, if you're not going to get the support from the parents, then it's, you know, it falls on deaf ears then, because they're not going to listen to anything you have to say.
Yeah, puts a teacher in a tough spot, in an unwinnable situation. And maybe there is that one teacher out there that could connect with that student. And, you know, every teacher is going to give it a try. And hopefully somewhere along the way, somebody makes that connection. But I think districts need to start looking for, you know, alternative plans for students like this, whether that be, like Christy brought up, counseling sessions or an alternative high school or something that better fits this student needs, because the school at this point is not serving that student.
Well said. Perfect.
All right. Well, we ready to bounce to number two? It was a sure. Nice transition, because number two deals with parents as well. So here is number two. And we'll let our guest go first on this one.
Oh, goody.
How do you handle a hostile parent? They've gone around blaming me for their children's behaviors. They try to get me removed from my classroom. They try to get their child removed from my classroom. They verbally accused me of physically abusing their child to everyone in the building. They refuse to speak to me. They walk away from me when I'm mid-sentence trying to talk to them. They accuse me of not knowing how to do my job. The child does the same thing with other teachers, no matter what room they're in or what teacher they're with. And this is another really difficult situation that deals with parents. Christy, what advice do you have to offer on this one?
All right. Well, when first looking at this one, I mean, it just seems like a really toxic relationship, in all honesty here. I don't know that this can be fixed. I mean, if I was truly in this situation and that parent wanted their child out of my room, I would be happy to have that happen, because it just doesn't seem that the relationship between student, child, and teacher is a productive one. From the rest of this, it doesn't really sound like there's a lot of productive relationships, but I don't see how that can be fixed. I kind of question where administrators are in this, because for this parent to be going around the building, talking to everybody, refusing to speak, I mean, it just seems like the parent has a lot of, I don't know, freedom or something to create havoc. And it doesn't seem like it's being checked. So I feel like I would kind of go on my end and be like, this is a problem. And like I said, happily say, if you think your child will be better served in another classroom, then I hope that's true, and let them go.
Christy, I wrote down the same exact thing. I said, get that student moved out of your class then, right? I will happily help them pack their bags, and I'll clean up their workspace for them and carry their stuff to the classroom across the hall. But you bring up a good point about, I would get it, you know, you get administration involved. You know, get your union involved. I mean, if they're accusing you of things, you know, let your union reps and your president know in your building. Document everything, just like I said with the last scenario. Document every interaction you have with that kid that they're suggesting happened. Make sure you have a documentation. But yeah, I would sit down with my administrators and say, okay, this isn't working. Let's find something that is going to work. So yeah, I mean, I would get them out of that toxic relationship. That it's better for student and you.
I don't have much to add on top of that. I had the same suggestions. We're going up. Go to your union. Shout out to the union for being there to protect you, especially with the accusations of abuse. I mean, that is stuff that could be career altering for you. And you want to protect yourself as fast as you can by documenting everything, by getting administration involved. As a teacher, we all know there, just like the last scenario, there are certain things within our control and certain things that we cannot control. And a lot of this stuff falls outside of stuff we can control. We can control, you know, that we document things and we can control who we talk to, but we can't control how that parent behaves, especially obviously you have limited contact with that parent and all of the contact you do have is negative. So it doesn't sound like a conversation is going to turn things around. So you have to seek intervention somehow, some way, or like you guys said, find that magic teacher in your building and hope that they can make a connection with them, because every teacher out there is trying. And I think I wish parents would see a pattern, because I'm sure for students like this, it is a pattern where if your student is involved in these, you know, or if this parent is involved in these altercations with so many different teachers, they need to realize the pattern is the parent's fault, not the teacher's fault.
That's not to say that like some rocky relationships can't be rectified, you know, because I think they can. And I do think that kind of depends on our approach as teachers. And I just have found in the past that if you automatically go on the defense and don't try to like kind of commiserate or at least hear them first, that usually does not bode well. But this looks like it's way beyond anything that can be fixed. I don't think the parents remotely interested in trying to figure that teacher out.
And also if things are happening in the classroom, you know, then you mentioned it, Joe, previously, it takes the attention away from the 28 other students or 29 other students in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you've got to get administrative help and say, hey, listen, the parent and the student are becoming detrimental to the learning environment for everyone else. So it's just not going to work.
I agree. We're ready to move to one that's more going to be involved inside the classroom and not involve resources outside the classroom.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Jeez.
All right. Let's jump to number three. What do you do when you have a class that is heavily based on group work and you have some students who consistently aren't pulling their weight in their group? I'm tempted to put them in a group together so they can stop holding their group members back, but that seems like giving up on them.
I actually have an idea. I don't know if it would work in this one, other than giving up for this one. This was shared at a PD once, and it depends on the type of group work, but the example was like for group quizzes, for example. And it's that every single person in the group has to create the same product. They work together, but they all create the same product. And the group doesn't know whose product is going to be collected by the teacher. So it kind of puts a little bit more impetus on everyone to make sure everyone's equally participating. Because what tends to happen, I feel like, in groups is the kids that do care about their grade will make up for the other kids, and they don't necessarily tell the other kids to do more. They'll just do more, you know, to fix the problem. But this way, if you don't know whose is going to be collected, you'd kind of try to make sure that that third fellow is making something that's pretty decent in case theirs is what's chosen. So that's something I've heard before, and I have tried before that seems to work. But I don't know about like in a big project court sort of circumstance.
Yeah, though I love that, Christy. That reminded me of a story from when I was in high school, your group story. I remember in my physics class in high school, our teacher would put like a really complicated problem on the board, and he would offer, I think it was like for extra credit. And he basically said, I don't know if it was when he was grading a bunch of papers or just didn't feel like teaching, but he put a really difficult problem on the board. And he's like, okay, at the end of the hour, we're going to pick a random student. And that student is going to come up and solve the problem in front of the class. And you all get five extra credit, 5 points or whatever it was. Like you all get this if that one person. So there was this peer pressure in the classroom to succeed. And, you know, the kids that got it were helping the kids that didn't get it. And everyone was, you know, sitting in their desk hoping they weren't the one put on a spot, but they were also trying to prepare themselves just in case they were that person, because that's, you know, definitely a way to hold kids accountable for it. Jeff, what do you think?
I think, if it's a class that's heavily based on group work, I think one of the things you need to do is you need to try to avoid the whole group grades, you know, and start doing individual grades for the students. And then, you know, when you're creating your assignments or whatever the task is, make sure there are specific roles. And so everybody has a specific task, and then you grade them on that portion. So maybe it's one person is required to do the visual aid, or maybe it's like a slideshow. One person is required to do the research document. One person is required to do this part and this part. That way, they'll get their grade for what they did for the project. And so, you know, that student who doesn't do what they're supposed to do, or that student who isn't pulling their weight, doesn't impact the group grade, right? So, because obviously, you know, you're going to have those kids who will just be, I'll do it myself. Well, this way they don't have to worry about that, because their grade is solely going to be impacted on what they produced and what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I love group work. I use group work a lot in my class. And I think it's important to point out that to me, the most important thing about group work is not the content they're learning. It's them learning that skill of working with other people. And we're always so fixated on measuring, like we talked about standardized tests at the beginning, measuring exactly what they know. But to teach a kid how to work with other people, I think is a good skill to teach. A couple things that I do in my class, Jeff, like you said, grade each kid individually or give them something specific. I often do that, especially if it's a group project where I don't let them choose their groups, where I put them in groups. Then I'll say, hey, like, this is what you're going to be graded on. So I think that's a great idea. Another thing I do is I do some projects sometimes that are, I call them choose your adventure, where the kids get like different options to choose from, but they can also choose whether they work individually or with a group. So the kids have that option, but if they choose to work with a group, depending on, I'll say like, hey, if you choose this, then you can work with, you know, individually or with up to three people or four people, depending on what it is. But if there's more people working in the group, that increases your output. So if you're making some kind of video, it increases the length of the video. So more people means more work. And the kids, you know, sometimes make a poor choice that first time that we do a project like that, and they pick someone that doesn't carry their weight. And, you know, they either suffer grade-wise, or they pick up the slack and do the work for them. But then the second time we do a similar project later in the year, a lot of times they cut the dead weight. And the teacher, you know, said, hey, should I just put all these kids together? Well, what happens sometimes in my class is those kids kind of have to choose, or they kind of end up together because, you know, they nobody else will really welcome them into their group because they've turned their group off to that. And then they learn the I think that's a good lesson for those kids that, hey, pull your weight, or you're going to get, you know, if you're not doing your work at your job, you're not going to get a paycheck. You're not going to have a job anymore. So I think it's a good lesson for those kids.
I was going to say, I don't think it's necessarily giving up on them if they're all together, because maybe they'll wake up to the fact that, oh gosh, everybody's carried me this whole time. And now it's a lot of work when I'm with people who won't work. And hopefully some of the kids are maybe a little bit more mature out of them will wake up to that. At least eventually, I'd hoped that most of them will. And maybe change their approach.
You know, Joe, we do in my class, I do a large group project at the end of the year. It's kind of like a final presentation. And I tell the kids right up front, I'm like, listen, you've worked with, you know, you've been in class since September with all of these students, and you've seen their production, you've seen presentations, you've seen posters that we've created, you've seen all these other things. Choose your groups wisely, right? Like, I give them, you know, and then I'll say, all right, you have until tomorrow. And then if, you know, you can change groups, but after that, we're locked in. And, you know, a lot of times you're right. It's, they end up gravitating towards each other. And then the other one's kind of just like, well, we'll work together. I would also suggest to this teacher is having some alternatives to the group work. You know, like you said, let them choose. Hey, if you want to work by yourself, you can work by yourself. and just change, like you said, Joe, change that output. Change, hey, instead of it being a 2-minute presentation, it's got to be 4 minutes if you're working with a partner or in a group. So if you know, you give those kids that option of, hey, I'm going to go by myself and just do it. That way they don't have to feel like they're carrying a group or carrying what quote unquote dead weight.
No, absolutely. I think that's great. Anything else on this one?
I don't think so.
All right, we're cutting short on time. We've got one more scenario here. We're going to jump through this one really quickly. So let me cut right to it. I have a student who likes to argue about everything. When any work is assigned, he just complains about the length and that it looks too complicated and so on, instead of just trying to do the assignment. Basically, she's saying that this student would just, if he would just do it, it would take him less time to do the assignment than if he's sitting there complaining the whole time. Can I have some tips on how to deal with this kind of a student? Chris, do you have any students like that?
Yes, I do. I mean, the kids in general, I don't know if it's an eighth grade feature, but they like to complain. And I tell them that, you know, I'm interested in their opinion, but ultimately I'm a dictator in the classroom and I make the final call on how things go. If somebody was this severe, I think I would refuse to engage. I mean, I don't know if even if he or she is not talking to the student, if they just project to the room, because I feel like even the kids around the student would get annoyed if they're talking to everybody because the teacher's not listening. But eventually it'd have to be like, you know, this is par for the course. I'm not going to be listening to this anymore. This is what we're doing. And not really make it able to debate, I guess.
Yeah.
If they keep going at that point, I don't know, but I would just kind of cut it out and be like, this is not something I'm wasting my time listening to.
I have a specific student, a sixth grader who does these kind of things all the time, makes comments constantly. And I'm like you, Christy, I got to the point now where I just kind of ignore it. And, you know, he'll make comments under his breath or, you know, to the person next to him. And the rest of his classmates are even kind of like, dude, shut up. And I just have to keep reminding myself that I'm the adult in the room and I'm the mature one in the room and I don't engage. And I don't even hear it. Right. I don't even, you know, when I'm given instructions or whatever, I don't even skip a beat. I don't even pay any attention to it. In hopes that he will catch on. He hasn't yet, and it's no. April 17th. But we hope maybe when he's in seventh grade, he catches on. But I don't, like you said, I don't even engage. I don't even give him the time of day. You know, at the beginning of the year, I may have, you know, like corrected the behavior and stuff, but now it doesn't even faze me.
Yep. And I think that's great advice, Jeff, because every teacher deals with students like this that complain about everything. You know, where we have a nice afternoon today after standardized testing in the morning and the kid wants to watch Cars 2 and the class votes on Cars 1, and he just starts complaining about it. And like whatever it is, like there's kids that complain about everything. And I think a lot of it is attention. And Jeff, I love that advice of just don't give them that attention that they're craving. And Christy, I loved your comment too about how, like, at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to make the rules, because one of the things I jotted down is don't give in. Please, teachers out there, when the kids complain like that, don't give in. I don't understand why these kids keep begging, but I bet that there are people out there that the more they beg, the more likely they are to give in. So it becomes a learned behavior where they keep complaining, hoping you're going to change what you do to appease them. And when we start doing that as teachers, that means we're lowering the bar. We're lowering our expectations and we're lowering the bar for our students. And I beg you, do not do that. And don't take it personally, teachers. We all have students that do this. And like I said, they will complain about anything and everything. And whether it's for attention or just because they don't know how to communicate very well. I think all three of us being middle school teachers, I know I've taught at the high school level, and Jeff, so have you. And it gets better. Like that immaturity, that behavior changes as they get older.
They grow out of it. I've seen it, you know, I've seen it firsthand. Or, you know, kids will come back to visit and they'll be like, I actually just had one, you know, just recently he came back and he was like, man, I was a complete jerk when I was in eighth grade. I am so sorry. He's like, I look back and I cannot believe, you know, what I would do and the stuff I would say. He's like, you know, I apologize. And it was just like, hey, you know what? It is what it is.
And once they realize it's not effective, they really do tend to stop if you don't give in. But it's like that variable reinforcement. If you give in every so often, they're going to keep trying. It's like gambling. If you win just
once, lever on the slot
you're going to keep going. So you got to stay strong.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's a great, great comment to end on. Any final thoughts, you guys?
No, this was fun. Thank you, Christy, for joining us. This was outstanding.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to come and share your wealth of knowledge with our audience. So thank you so much.
No problem.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. As always, please do us a favor and like, subscribe, give us a follow. But more importantly, tell a friend, tell a teacher, tell someone you know that has dealt with some of these situations to share our podcast with them and tell them to give it a listen. Because as I say all the time, we're trying to build a community here and we can't do it without your help. Join us next week. We're going to be talking about teacher prep programs. We're going to, Jeff and I are going to reflect on our teacher preparation and talk about what is the best way to prepare a new teacher for the classroom. So join us next week for that. This is Joe and Jeff signing off, reminding you to keep going above and beyond those standards because you may not make a lot of money, but you do make a difference.